In room 12 of the Canyon City Inn, Ruben Pacheco looked down at a rusty-haired whore named Eve.
Goddamn woman, satisfy me.
With his left hand, he grabbed her chin, her face appearing doll-sized in his massive paw.
Satisfy me!
I can't!
Pacheco's face turned brick red, mottled with violet as he ground his jaws together. He swept his left hand behind his right shoulder and brought it forward in a vicious arc. Eve flew from the bed, arms and legs akimbo, and hit the floor. He froze when the door swung open to reveal a short, broad-shouldered man with a scraggly beard and a bartender's apron. His Mexican features were pinched with anger as he shuttled his gaze from Eve to Pacheco.
What you do to my whore, big man?
She's worthless. Like a fucking cold blanket.
The giant slapped a hand to his swollen cheek. He felt like he was sucking a billiard ball. Ignoring Eve, who was slumped over on her knees, her cheek pressed to the floor, the Mexican bartender stepped toward Pacheco, slitting his eyes and shaking his head.
It ain't no whore you need, big man. You need a dentist. Ouch. That looks bad. It hurts, no?
Hurts like hell.
Pacheco sat on the edge of the bed, regarding the whore with disdain. He'd hoped the whore and some whiskey would take his mind off the throbbing tooth, which had begun aching 3 days ago. At first, the pain was a dull ache, and he'd been able to ignore it. Yesterday, however, it had begun grieving him with a vengeance. The whiskey had worked for a while, and then he'd decided to try a whore. Sitting in a hotel saloon, he grabbed the first one he saw, threw her over his shoulder, and carried her upstairs. A dentist hadn't occurred to him. He'd never visited one before. His teeth had never grieved him. It was this damn civilized living that rotted the teeth, the same way it rotted your bones, shriveled your lungs and your heart, and diseased your mind. He should have stayed in the mountains.
Look what you did to Eve!
The bartender pimp extended his arm and open palm at the girl.
She's my best whore. If you put her out of commission, you have to pay.
Ignoring the man, Pacheco reached for his shirt.
Where's the dentist?
Ain't no dentist in Canyon City. Have to see Doc Romer. He'd take care of you, but he's pricey. 25 cents a tooth. It is a boomtown, no?
Pacheco tugged his shirt on and reached for his boots. 10 minutes later, Pacheco was standing in Doc Romer's place, pointing at his mouth.
You want me to do what?
Pull it, goddammit!
Pacheco cupped his swollen cheek in his hand, sweat soaking his half-white, half-sandy beard, the birthmark even redder than usual.
Pull the damn thing out!
Both hands clutching the desk behind him, the doctor scowled up at Pacheco.
What?
My tooth! Pull the damn tooth! Oh, Christ, pull the damn thing out!
The doctor's features flattened, and his flush abated as he realized the reason for the bizarre stranger's visit.
Toothache, eh? I see. Sit down. I'll get my knife. No, not in my chair. You'll break it. Sit on the floor against the wall.
Pacheco obeyed without hesitation, dropping clumsily to his knees, then twisting around on his butt, shoving his back against the wall beside the door. The doctor re-entered the room, carrying a knife and a thin pliers.
I'd offer you more whiskey, but from the smell, I'd say you've had enough.
No whiskey! Just cut the son of a bitch out now!
Hold on, hold on.
The doctor moved a green-gold Rochester lamp from his desk to the small round table near Pacheco. When he got it lit, he jerked up his pants at the thighs and dropped to his knees.
Open wide.
He peered inside the big dark hole of Pacheco's mouth, squinting against the hot, fetid breath.
Wider.
The giant opened his mouth another inch. The doctor canted his own head sideways, squinting into the smelly chasm, looking for the problematic tooth. It wasn't easy to find. They all looked problematic, rotten and crooked and half dead. He'd seen better teeth on taffy-chewing Welsh miners.
There we go. Mercy.
He reached inside Pacheco's mouth with the pliers in his right hand, the scalpel in his left.
Good Lord.
After several minutes, the doctor withdrew his tools and shook his head.
The damn roots must be wrapped around your jaw.
Oh, love it, don't!
Pacheco grabbed the pliers out of the doctor's hand, stuck them into his mouth, and closed them over the tooth. Wide-eyed with horror, the doctor backed against the desk. Pacheco's head smacked the wall as his hand jerked back, the pliers exiting his mouth in a spray of blood. In their grip rested the molar, the size of a large caliber bullet, its snake-like roots dripping thick red drops onto the knotted pine floor. Pacheco leaned forward and spit a wad into the doctor's basin. Looking up, he saw the doctor staring at him in shock. He removed the tooth from the pliers and slapped it into Romer's hand.
There you go. Did your job for you.
Romer looked up from the tooth in his hand, gray mustache twitching.
My God, man. Who are you anyway?
Reuben Pacheco. I'll take that whiskey now.
The doctor eyed him darkly, then climbed to his feet, holding the tooth like something dropped from another planet. He disappeared into the adjacent room, returned without the tooth, but with a thick wad of gauze in one hand and a whiskey bottle in the other. Popping the cork, he handed the bottle to Pacheco, still sitting against the wall. Pacheco grabbed the bottle, tipped it back, washed the whiskey around in his mouth, and spit it into the basin.
Pacheco, I've heard of you. Bounty hunter, ain't you?
Shrugging one shoulder, Pacheco took another deep sip, swirled the whiskey between his cheeks, and swallowed.
You wouldn't be after Kuno Massey, would you?
Pacheco lifted his head sharply, regarding Romer with interest. The doctor smiled and nodded.
Thought so.
You seen Massey?
The building's savage fire in the giant's eyes sent a chill down Romer's spine, and the doctor lost his tongue. As Pacheco climbed slowly to his feet, using the wall to steady himself, Romer stumbled backward, his eyes rising with Pacheco's until he stared up at the giant from beneath his eyebrows, head tipped back to his shoulders. He was a good foot and a half shorter than his visitor.
Answer me, you son of a bitch!
Pacheco's right fist slowly grabbed a handful of the doctor's collar.
You seen Massey in town?
The doctor's mustache twitched again, and so did his eyes. He tried to twist loose of the giant's grip, but quickly realized he might as well try to escape the grip of a silver-tipped grizzly. He settled for a nod, eyes bright with fear.
Where?
Romer grabbed the giant's fist with both his own and pushed down, trying to loosen the grip.
Let me go and I'll tell you.
Pacheco released the collar, the deep flush in Romer's face slowly receding.
3 days ago, he came to me with arrow wounds. Kiowa.
Where'd he go?
Left town, northeast. I sent 3 men after him. They're still after him, far as I know. We were gonna split the reward, but it don't look like my boys are gonna find him. They're miners, not man-trackers. He's all yours as far as I'm concerned. Good luck finding him.
Pacheco stared hard at the doctor for a good minute, his eyes bouncing around in their sockets like billiard balls in tight pockets. He wasn't seeing the doctor, Romer knew. He was pondering his quarry. Romer was glad he was no longer Pacheco's quarry. Finally, the bounty hunter grabbed the gauze out of the doctor's hand, stuffed it into his mouth, and packed it tightly over his jaw.
Thanks.
Marlene had been right. Kuno needed more rest than he'd thought. He slept most of the first day he'd awakened in the cabin, most of the next day, and even the day after that. He got up only to relieve himself and to see that he wasn't yet ready to walk 50 feet, much less mount a horse. Slowly, he regained his appetite and was able to eat more and more of Marlene's stews and soups, consisting of beans and venison, seasoned with herbs, wild onions, and dry rose hips. She brewed a nourishing aromatic tea from horehound bark she'd foraged while hunting. In the afternoon of the third day, Kuno lay awake and alone in the cabin, brooding over the time he was wasting. If it hadn't been for the Kiowas, he would have been halfway to Julesburg by now. Marlene walked in and closed the door behind her, testing the latch. Turning to him, she removed her hat, shook out her hair, letting it fall across her slender shoulders, and tossed the hat on the table. She favored Kuno with a smoky grin. Kuno pushed up on his elbows.
What the hell are you up to?
The shaver's off checking the trap lines.
With a devilish smile in place, she unbuttoned her green plaid shirt. Her blue eyes slanted like those of some Nordic priestess, a bewitching vixen with the uncanny ability to turn men's hearts to whale blubber. Kuno watched her fingers move down the shirt, laying more and more of her torso bare. She wasn't wearing her customary undershirt, and as she stripped the wool shirt down her arms and dropped it to the floor, her bare breasts jutted at him, creamy and pink-tipped and bouncing slightly as she moved to unbutton her jeans.
This supposed to help my leg heal?
Kuno tossed aside his blankets, his pulse racing. This flaxen-haired outlaw vixen cast a mighty powerful spell.
Best medicine I know.
The next day, he was on his feet for several hours, repairing trail gear and currying Renegade and the Arabian. The day after, he spent 3 hours helping Marlene and Sandy stake and stretch their beaver and fox hides and add them to the plue bales they intended to trade for trail goods when they came to a settlement. He was fit enough to ride the next day. After supper, he was drying venison for jerky on a lariat line strung across the cabin. He turned to Marlene, sitting on a bunk and darning a shirt.
You hear something?
She looked up, listening.
No.
Sandy was sitting on the floor near the stove, flipping through a yellowed magazine he'd found in a woodpile behind the cabin. He'd lifted his chin toward the rafters.
Horse.
Instantly, Kuno's Colt was in his hand and he headed for the door.
You two stay down.
He cracked the door and peered out. Seeing little but shadows and branches nodding in the breeze, he slipped quickly outside, pressed his back to the cabin, and drew the door until the latch caught. Squeezing the pistol in his right hand, he listened. Finally, he stepped out into the clearing before the cabin, looked around, and strolled back to where the horses were tied to their picket line. All stood tensely, ears pricked. Renegade gazed off across the clearing before the cabin, as if he heard something from that direction.
What is it, boy?
Kuno stroked his neck and followed his gaze with his own. He saw nothing but shadows sliding amidst the darkness. Above, bands of stars swathed the velvet sky. Finally, deciding the horses might have heard a raccoon or some other night creature, Kuno headed back to the cabin. If a predator approached, the horses would let him know.
Anything?
Nothing, as far as I can tell. We best turn in. We'll leave at first light.
Only a few minutes passed before Marlene and Sandy were asleep. Kuno, however, lay awake on his bunk, arms crossed behind his head. A vague unease pricked at the edges of his consciousness, keeping his ears alert, straining, expectant. Finally, he got up and dressed quietly, securing the Colt around his waist. He was moving toward the door, squinting into the darkness, when he stopped in his tracks. As the door burst open, Kuno dropped to one knee, clawing the Colt from his hip. In the open doorway, a shadow moved and fell to the floor.
What the hell's going on?
Stay down!
Kuno ran to the door. The bearded, barrel-chested man he'd shot lay sprawled on his back in the yard. The man wore heavy canvas trousers and the short-heeled boots favored by miners. The two holes in his chest, spaced a nickel's width apart, gleamed wetly in the starlight. An old model Navy Colt lay nearby in the grass. Kuno lifted his gaze. He'd thought he'd seen two shadows in the doorway, and now he was sure of it. A man was skirting the clearing to Kuno's left, not far from the tethered horses. Kuno ran toward him. It was a halting, clumsy run on his bum leg. Dragging the leg, gritting his teeth against the old pain, he figured he was moving only half as fast as his quarry. The man disappeared quickly, and when Kuno entered the trees, he stopped. Something moved ahead and to his right. Instinctively, he threw himself left. Kuno lifted his head to see two large silhouettes burst through the trees, heading away from him. Kuno climbed gingerly to his feet.
Damn.
Hearing the person approaching from the way of the cabin, Kuno turned and started back. He met Marlene halfway, her slender figure clad in jeans and an undershirt, rifle in her hands.
You okay?
Kuno nodded.
There were two more. One must have been staying with their horses. They're gone.
Shit, I thought I covered our trail.
The doctor's henchmen were bound to find us eventually. We should have been out of here days ago.
You couldn't ride.
I can ride now. Let's break camp and vamoose before any more miners decide to try their hand at bounty hunting.
It was late August when they topped a sage-tufted knoll and reined their horses to a halt, squinting against the sun and their own dust catching up to them. Below lay the town on the south side of the South Platte River, where the trouble had begun when Kuno had killed Vince Evans on the third floor of Roderick's Hotel. It was a bitter homecoming. As Kuno stared down at the dusty, swayback town of false-fronted businesses and mud and adobe dwellings carved from sage and greasewood, bile boiled in his guts. He was close now, so very close, to the man who'd put the bounty on his head, caused the death of his beloved July, and made his life a living hell.
What now?
Kuno gigged Renegade down the knoll.
Come on. I know where we can hole up for a few days, until I can figure it all out.
They rode over to the main trail and followed it into town. Julesburg was on the busy overland trail, and as they threaded their way past the tattered Civil War Army tents and slab-sided sheds on the town's outskirts, they had to thread their way through the bull and mule trains as well. The scouts and outriders, clad in dusty trail garb and mounted on muscular pintos and quarter horses, wasted little time in heading for Julesburg's many watering holes. It was only a little afternoon, but the hitch racks before the sun-baked cantinas were jammed. Roderick's hotel was the only mansard-roofed three-story building in town. Kuno was glad to see it still standing. On the savage frontier, businesses and structures didn't last much longer than the men who ran or built them. Keeping his hat pulled low over his forehead, Kuno made his way through the brush behind the buildings lining the north side of the main avenue. Kuno led Marlene and Sandy to the back of Roderick's hotel. A staircase of white chipped paint ran up the rear, with landings and doors on both the second and third floors. At ground level, under the second floor landing, another door opened into what Kuno remembered as a storage room.
Sandy, this is gonna be up to you.
The boy turned his sun-seasoned face to Kuno, a pale streak just above his eyes where the hat shielded him from the sun.
What's that?
I want you to walk around and enter the hotel through the front. Inside, you'll probably see a thin old man sitting behind a desk. Tell him you have a message for a girl named Glory.
Who's Glory?
If Glory isn't there, give the message to Frida. If Frida isn't there...
Who's Frida?
Give the message to Minnie.
Who in the hell is Minnie?
You'll find out soon. I hope.
What am I supposed to tell her?
Tell her she has an old friend who wants to talk to her outside, behind the sty back there. Give her the message personally. If the old man's nosy, tell him it's business. He should understand.
Can I tell him your name?
No. The girl might repeat it out loud. Go.
Eager to please, Sandy slipped out of his saddle, tossed his reins up to Kuno, and walked quickly around the building. Meanwhile, Kuno and Marlene gigged their horses behind the horse stable with a lean-to pigsty.
They'll think it's business. Whores, I take it.
Kuno dismounted and peered around the sty at the hotel.
Those whores saved my life. I hate like hell involving them, but I see no other way.
A whorehouse is no place for a boy. You should have sent me.
The girls have only the third floor. The rest of the place is a bona fide hotel. Besides, if I'd sent you, I'd probably have a she-fight on my hands.
Making a sour face as she sat her horse, Marlene turned away. Kuno smiled again, facing the hotel. Circumstances, he realized of a sudden, had sent him into some of the trickiest territory he'd yet negotiated. Kuno and Marlene waited behind the pig pen in testy silence. Sandy appeared about 10 minutes after he'd entered the hotel. He strolled along the worn path from the main avenue. Looking around and seeing no one, he broke into a run that brought him back behind the pigsty.
Well?
I found Miss Glory. She was taking a bath. She didn't sound very thrilled, but she said since it's been slow lately, she'd come.
So, it's been slow lately, huh?
A quarter hour must have passed before the sound of a door closing rose to Kuno's ears. He looked around the sty. A short girl appeared, wearing a bedrobe over a powder blue nightgown. Her long blonde hair hung wet around her shoulders, water droplets glistening. Frowning, she glanced at the sky, blinking her eyes against the bright sun, then opened a parasol and walked across the lot toward the pig pen.
Behind the sty, my eye.
As she approached, she saw him standing at the corner of the tawdry structure and stopped, planting an angry fist on a hip and looking up at him.
Look here, friend. I don't know who you think you are, but...
Kuno lifted his head, smiling as he poked his hat brim back.
Oh my goodness gracious! Kuno Massey! You're alive!
She dropped her parasol and threw her arms around his neck, burying her face in his chest.
I thought for sure, after all these months, with all those wanted Dodgers old Evans sent out.
Yeah, I did too.
Kuno peeled her arms from his neck and stooped to gaze directly into her face.
Listen, can you hold us up for a while?
He looked around to indicate Sandy and Marlene, who stood a few feet away, hip-cocked, arms crossed on her chest, regarding Glory with unadulterated scorn.
Sure, but Kuno, what are you doing in Julesburg?
I got a score to settle, Glory. You know who with. If you don't want me around the hotel, I'll understand, but I'd appreciate it if you'd put up Marlene and Sandy for a few days.
After what you did for us, drilling some daylight through that bastard woman-beater Vince Evans? Don't be silly. Our home is yours for as long as you need it. But I can't say that's going to be long if you're going after Franklin Evans.
Thanks, Glory. We'll stable our horses down the street, where old Roderick won't see them, and be right back.
Kuno, Marlene, and Sandy stabled their horses at the South Platte livery and feed barn, then climbed the outside stairs at the rear of Roderick's hotel, slumped under the weight of their saddlebags and rifles. Waiting for them, Glory opened the door and led them down a narrow, dim hall, the walls papered in gilded red flower patterns.
You can have my room. I'll sleep in Frida's room.
Ugh, sleep, I'm sure.
Marlene spoke from behind Kuno, who ignored her. They were halfway down the hall when a door opened ahead. A short, swarthy cowboy emerged, a quirly in his lips, a sheepish smile curling his thick black mustache. As he stepped into the hall, he slicked his hair back with one hand and set an overlarge Dakota-creased hat on his head.
Don't make yourself a stranger now, Charlie.
As a girl moved toward the door, her shadow grew in the hall. Kuno lowered his head as the cowboy passed, then raised it again. Before him, in the open doorway, stood a chubby girl with rich auburn hair hanging straight down her back to her waist. Clad in gossamer silk and smoking a cigarette in a long wooden holder, she owned the round, dark-eyed face of a Slav. Her breasts were deep and pear-shaped between the sheer fabric, the large nipples canted outward. Kuno smiled, and the girl frowned up at him, thoughtful.
Hi, Frida.
The girl's frown etched itself deeper, her dark doe's eyes flashing gold.
Kuno?
She blinked her eyes and removed the cigarette holder from her thin but sensuous mouth.
Kuno Massey?
She took two steps toward him.
What on earth are you doing in Julesburg? Are you crazy?
I reckon. We'll be staying here a while. If you and Minnie don't mind, that is. This here's Marlene. The whip is Sandy. Friends of mine.
Hi, Sandy.
Frida smiled at the boy, a smile which went away as she turned to Marlene.
What'd you do, Kuno? Get yourself hitched?
I've kept my head above water so far.
That's quite an outfit you have there. Sandy, avert your eyes.
Thanks. I'm thrilled you like it.
Frida gave her eyes a slow blink as she turned her gaze again to Kuno.
We all owe you a favor, especially Minnie. She'd be pushing up prickly pears on a boot hill if you hadn't done away with that Evans trash. But I'll ask again, what are you doing here?
I'm here to get a bounty off my head.
Frida turned to Glory, who shrugged. Turning back to Kuno, Frida shook her head gravely.
That's crazy. I'm impressed you're still alive with that bounty on your head, but Kuno, you don't have a chance against Evans' mule shoe crew. Not a whore's chance at the pearly gates.
Thanks for the note of confidence, Frida.
Kuno, don't be crazy. Leave here, go to Canada, go to Mexico. You're still alive, that means you're ahead of the game.
Just forget about the bounty on my head?
Yes.
Kuno turned as a door opened across the hall. Another girl appeared. A brown-eyed, tawny-haired young woman with a tomboy's figure similar to Marlene's. Her face was narrow, with a fine nose, pointed chin, and heavy-lidded eyes. Her hair hung straight to her shoulders, falling from a man's funnel-brimmed hat. She wore a man's overlarge pinstriped shirt with the oversized sleeves rolled up her arms. The shirt sagged open, revealing a goodly portion of both high, apple-round breasts.
What have you brought us to, a damn dairy farm?
I agree. Forget about the bounty. Leave here, Kuno.
Not until I get my life back. And that won't happen until the bounty's gone.
You don't know what you're getting into.
Can't be much worse than what I've already been through.
Yes, it can.
Minnie's slender face formed a wry smile as she tilted her head slightly. Kuno looked at Frida and Glory, both standing with their eyes downcast. An awkward silence pooled.
What's going on, Minnie? How do you know so well what Evans is capable of?
Oh, don't ask her.
Kuno stared at Minnie. She stared back, her eyes acquiring a fine sheen, her smile broadening until several large tears spilled down her cheeks. Turning slowly, she wriggled her shoulders. The shirt fell down her arms, baring her back. Long white welts were etched across Minnie's slender back, from her delicate shoulders to her waist. The healed scars chewing, gouging, and knotting the once flawless, creamy skin. It was like looking at a lovely painting slashed to ribbons with a bowie knife. There had to be 10 lashes at least, though it was hard to tell for sure. Several overlapped. The thought of a bullwhip wielded against this tough but tender, vulnerable girl made Kuno's molars grind and his jaws ache.
I do thank you for saving me from Vince.
Minnie lifted the shirt and turned to Kuno, her eyes staunch and ironic once again.
But his father isn't much nicer.
Kuno engulfed her in his arms. She stood stiffly, arms at her sides.
I'm sorry.
God knows it wasn't your fault. I was just showing you how much you don't want to tangle with Evans and his men. It didn't do any good, did it?
No, sure didn't.
He smiled back at her. In fact, seeing the scars only cemented his resolve. Franklin Evans would die a hideous death. He kissed Minnie's forehead, then turned to Glory, who showed him, Marlene, and Sandy to their room. When they dumped their saddlebags on the floor, Kuno turned to Glory, standing in the doorway.
I'll send up water for baths. Shall I bring 2 tubs up, or just one?
One.
Marlene entwined her hands around Kuno's arm. She gave Glory a catty smile. Glory returned the smile in kind, and grabbed Sandy's hand.
Come on, sugar. You can stay with me and Frida. Oh, don't worry. He's cute as a speckled pup, but I'm not craving.
Pulling Sandy into the hall, she closed the door. Turning, Kuno saw Marlene regarding him skeptically. Lovely slanted eyes slanted more than usual.
Just how well do you know these girls anyway?
For the next 2 days, Kuno lay low, biding his time and considering his options. Sandy and Marlene brought food back to the room. Otherwise, all three of them stayed close to the hotel's third floor, careful that the girls' customers didn't see them. Whenever Frida or Glory had a client, Sandy was sent back to Marlene and Kuno's room. Late on the third night of their stay at Roderick's, Kuno woke suddenly. The room was dark. The street below the open windows lay silent. A figure moved to his left, and there were the sounds of someone gathering clothes and dressing. It was Marlene. When she donned a clean shirt and denim, she gently stepped into her boots, slowly, carefully, obviously trying to make as little sound as possible. Kuno's first impulse was to ask her what she was doing, but something held his tongue. Ever since she had killed the Mexican bounty hunter, he'd harbored vague reservations about her. So vague that most of the time he wasn't even aware of them himself. He hadn't wanted to acknowledge them because he'd found himself falling in love with the girl. He had to acknowledge them now, however. It didn't make sense her getting up and going out in a wide-open town like Julesburg in the middle of the night. He lay there, feigning sleep, until she quietly opened the door and left the room. When the bolt clicked in the latch, he threw the covers back and reached for his clothes. When Kuno had dressed and strapped his gun and cartridge belt around his waist, he left the room and strode quickly down the hall, dark and silent at this late hour. He left the building by the rear door, paused on the landing to scan the night-cloaked lot with its stable and pig pen, then quickly descended the stairs on the balls of his feet. At the bottom, he hurried around the building to the street, paused again, and looked around. A block away on his right, a saloon was still lit up, but quiet, only a handful of hang-headed, hip-shod horses tethered out front. From the stars, Kuno figured it was around 3 a.m. Looking left, Kuno saw a slender, shadowy figure disappear around the land office on the other side of the street. He loped that way, ducking under a hitch rack, mounting the boardwalk, and edged a look around the corner of the whipsawed shack, looking south toward scattered tents and shanties and the infinite star-draped Colorado desert beyond. Marlene walked away from him, vagrant light reflecting off her denims, shirt, and hair bobbing down from her hat. Kuno stepped around the corner, following her through the soft dirt of the side street, avoiding fresh horse apples. He walked quickly, squinting, picking her out of the night shadows. When she came to a tar paper shack and corral in which a dozen oxen milled, she angled off the trail, disappearing behind the shack. Kuno broke into a jog. He sidled up to the shack and stole a glance behind, where a knoll rose, framed and flanked by spindly cottonwood trees. Looking cautiously to either side, making sure no one else was about, Kuno cat-footed forward through the sage bushes and dropped to his knees behind the knoll, lifting his chin and pricking his ears. Adrenaline jetting, Kuno leapt to his feet and jogged around the knoll.
Hey!
Kuno rounded the knoll and peered through the cottonwoods. Marlene lay on her butt, pushing up on her elbows. A tall man with a drooping paunch and high-peaked sombrero stood over her, reaching for her arm. At Kuno's voice, he froze and jerked his head up, his right hand slapping the revolver on his hip. Kuno shot him through the head, blowing his sombrero down his back. Lowering his Colt, Kuno walked over to Marlene, who stayed down on her elbows, gazing up at him. Her hat lay several feet away on the ground. Her hair was splashed across her face and head. She didn't say anything, just stared up at him, her eyes guilty, defeated, with only a vague shadow of her customary defiance.
Spill it.
He stood over her, feet spread, Colt hanging down by his thigh. His left fist was tightly clenched at his side as though ready to strike.
You ain't gonna like it.
I have a feeling.
That was Pablo Morado's brother, Raul.
Kuno's heart burned, threatening to squeeze through his ribs. He didn't say anything, just waited for her to continue.
Pablo was part of our gang. The morning we ambushed you, he'd gotten into an argument with Jess, and he hung back from the group. When he found the rest of the gang dead, he followed us. You, me, and Sandy.
Pablo wasn't going for his gun when you shot him, was he?
I shot him because he was a fool and because I didn't want to share the reward.
What were you going to do? Back shoot me or stab me some night while I slept?
One or the other, most likely. I was going to wait until we were a little closer to Julesburg.
My destination was nice and convenient for you. No hauling the body for days in the hot sun. Or were you just going to take my head back to Evans?
She shrugged a shoulder and dipped her head shamefully.
I ain't gotten that far yet.
What's the deal with Raul?
When you were heading in the cabin from the arrow wounds, I rode down to Canyon City one day and wired him in Denver. He'd been part of our gang once too, only he and Jess parted company a little over a year ago.
Her gaze softened and she swallowed and shook stray wisps of hair from her eyes.
I couldn't take you down. Not after we'd made love. I'd let Raul do it.
And you'd split the reward?
No. I'd kick Raul off some night after he curled up on the bottom of a whiskey bottle.
Kuno glanced at the dead Mexican.
What happened?
Her eyes softened even more, and for a moment it appeared she was going to sob.
I reckon somewhere between here and Canyon City, or maybe even before Canyon City, I fell in love with you.
Kuno didn't say anything. Seeing the cold look in his eyes, Marlene climbed to her feet and moved stiffly toward him. She placed her hands on his chest.
Please, Kuno, I know it sounds bad, but I've changed. I love you. Please believe me.
She wrapped her hands around his neck, tried to kiss him, but he tipped his head back and away from her. He took her wrists in his hands and slowly but forcefully pushed her away.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Kuno, please.
You can clean your things out of the room tomorrow, when I'm not there. Until then, I don't know what you're gonna do, and I can't say I give a shit.
Stiffly, he turned and walked away. After a sleepless night, and leaving Sandy in the charge of the three pleasure girls at Roderick's, Kuno was on the trail heading southeast of Julesburg just after sunrise the next day. Having come up with no satisfactory plan in town for dealing with Franklin Evans, he decided to ride out to the Evans range and play it by ear. He entertained a half-baked notion of stealing onto the ranch compound after dark, getting into the house, and somehow isolating Evans from the rest of the household. After the hell Evans had made of Kuno's life, Kuno wanted to give the bastard a slow, painful send-off to the smoking gates. But he doubted he'd have time to do much more than simply pink the son of a bitch. Not and be able to get off the ranch alive, that is. On the other hand, he didn't really care if he lived or died, as long as Franklin Evans died miserably. He'd found himself unexpectedly falling in love, but that was gone now too. Marlene, like virtually everyone else he'd met in the past year, and in spite of her passionate lovemaking, had been out only for the bounty on his head. She'd strung him along like a kitten on a scrap of yarn for too many miles. He wouldn't trust her now as far as he could throw an elephant into a strong wind. The memory of last night raked his haunches once again, and he lifted his head from the shaggy two-track trail he was following, looking around to distract himself as much as to get his bearings. At the bottom of a long, easy grade to his right lay a creek framed by bur oaks, box elders, and willows. To his left rose a bluff with patches of sage and buffalo grass, its steep sides pitted, eroded, and cluttered with gravel slides, its base strewn with boulders. According to the livery jostler back in Julesburg, the Evans Mule Shoe Ranch lay straight ahead, beyond the creek curving onto the trail ahead of him. All Kuno could see, however, was an endless expanse of saffron prairie desert folding down into shallow cuts and dry washes and rising abruptly to infrequent buttes and mesas and short jogs of distant hills. Kuno gig renegade ahead, crossing the creek and following the trail for another 2 miles before approaching a timbered sign arched over the road. The Mule Shoe brand blazed into it. On the right side of the road stood another smaller sign on a single post. Private property, it read, "Keep Out." Below, another board had been added bearing underlined red letters, "This means you." Kuno looked around. He was on a table with no ridges or trees or other cover for hundreds of yards. Seeing one of Evans's riders, he gigged Renegade under the arch and rode a half mile up the trail before branching off cross-country, heading east through a shallow valley at the bottom of which twisted a rocky wash. As he rode, he suppressed the memory of last night with Marlene by working on a way to slip onto the Mule Shoe compound and deal Franklin Evans some old-fashioned frontier justice, with as much mercy as his bounty hunters had shown July. Kuno's thoughts broke off abruptly when he heard something on the breeze. Reining Renegade to a halt, he touched the butt of his Colt and lifted his head, listening. Deciding the sound came from over the ridge to his left, he gigged Renegade that way, climbing the ridge covered with minty-smelling sage. He halted the horse and looked around. Below lay a deep, narrow valley threaded by another wash and several spindly cottonwoods.
"Help! Someone please help me!"
The woman's voice rose from beyond the next steep ridge. Kuno glanced around for a route across the deep-scored valley. Riding south several yards, he came to an angling deer trail, followed it down the ridge, through the thick brush, and across the narrow, rocky wash at the bottom. By the time he made the base of the opposite ridge, he and Renegade were covered with burrs and pussy willow seeds. Finding another game trail, Kuno climbed the chalky, eroded slope to the narrow peak and stared off to the east. Beyond was a vast expanse of sun-baked badlands, deep-scored canyons separated by rocky scarps and sandstone buttes cut millions of years ago by powerful glacier-fed streams. In the distance, a great golden eagle traced lazy circles in the brassy sky, this vast devil's obstacle course no doubt a lucrative hunting ground.
"Thank God! Please help me!"
Kuno lowered his eyes. 60 feet down the steep, rocky slope, tufted with hard, dry shrubs and bunch grass, a young woman stood on a narrow ledge. Her head was tipped back, revealing a pretty, delicate face, round brown eyes staring up at him beseechingly. Thick cinnamon hair blew around in the breeze. She wore a cream blouse with puffy sleeves, a green wool riding skirt, and matching cloth boots with high heels. The blouse and skirt were torn. Blood glistened on her right arm.
"I've been trapped here for 2 hours. My horse threw me."
"Hold on.
Kuno dismounted, plucked his lariat from the saddle, and paded down the slope.
Can you get it?
Got it!
He watched as she grabbed the rope with both hands, favoring her right arm.
Wrap it around your waist and tie it!
She wrapped the rope around her waist and lowered her head as she tied the knot. She took a long time.
What's the matter?
She lifted her head, her lovely face pinched with frustration.
I'm afraid I injured my hand. I can't tie the knot.
Hold on.
Kuno turned Renegade around, facing back down the gentle slope they'd just climbed, away from the girl in the ravine.
Stay, boy. Stay.
He turned back to the ravine and began crawling down the steep, rocky slope toward the girl, testing each rock and crevice before planting his feet and hands. The descent wasn't difficult until he was 10 feet from the bottom, where the hand and foothold suddenly gave way to a wall of smooth clay. He paused, looking down.
Careful!
Kuno looked around for an easy way down. The ledge upon which the girl stood was only about 6 feet square. The sheer wall extended a good 10 feet on either side of it.
Step to the right as far as you can.
When she was hugging the right side of the ledge, Kuno turned and let himself fall straight down, arms thrust out for balance. He hit the left side of the ledge, bounding forward and grinding his feet into the sandstone beneath him before his momentum could carry him over the edge. The girl reached out and grabbed his arm, pulling him back against the butte.
Oh, God! I thought you were going over!
Kuno turned to her, his eyes traveling from her pretty, delicately carved face with full, wide lips and lustrous eyes, down her fine alabaster neck to her chemise-clad bosom, partly exposed by her soiled blouse, from which several buttons were missing. She was tall, slender, and high-breasted, with a dark, heart-shaped mole on her neck. Self-consciously, she pulled the top of the garment closed with her left hand.
Are you all right?
Oh, yes. I'm just scratched and bruised. I was riding the ridge when my horse spooked at a snake. He threw me and I slid off the ridge.
You must have landed hard. Sure you didn't break anything?
She lifted her right hand, flexing the fingers.
I think it's just sprained.
Let me see.
Gently, Kuno took the girl's hand in his. It was soft and smooth and long-fingered, with a small cameo ring on the ring finger, a tiny amethyst inset in gold on the pinky. He squeezed the slightly swollen wrist gently with his right hand and bent it with his left.
Oh. I think you're right. It's just a sprain.
He smiled at her.
What do you say we get you out of here?
That's the best idea I've heard all day.
Kuno grabbed his lariat, looped it, and dropped it first over her and then over him. Drawing her close and turning her away from him, he drew the loop tight about their waists. He only vaguely acknowledged the thrill of having a lovely girl this close to him, their hips locked together.
Ready?
She nodded.
Let my horse do the work. Pull, boy! Easy!
The horse stepped forward. The rope tightened suddenly, jerking Kuno and the girl up and forward. Grabbing the rope with both hands, Kuno slammed his feet against the clay bank.
Keep going, Randy. Slow, nice and slow.
The rope tightened, drawing Kuno and the girl slowly up the slope. Kuno climbing with his feet over the rocks and around shrubs, gritting his teeth against the rope cutting into his lower back. The girl ground back against him, her thick hair wisping about his face, catching in his lips.
Keep going, boy, just a little more. Easy, boy, easy. Stop!
Now on the ridgetop, Kuno looked up. The girl's lovely, dust-smudged face was 6 inches from his own, her round eyes the rich brown of mahogany. She flushed. Kuno reached down and loosened the knot holding them together.
You okay?
Kuno threw off the loop.
Yes. Thank you. I'm not sure what I would have done if you hadn't come along.
It was a ticklish situation.
Kuno climbed to his feet and offered her his hand. She took it, and he helped her to her feet. When they'd dusted themselves off, she tossed her hair back from her temples, untangling it with her fingers.
Well, I guess we best get back to the ranch.
Coiling his rope, Kuno gazed at her curiously.
You are one of my father's riders, aren't you?
Who's your father?
Why, Franklin Evans, of course. I'm Delinda, his daughter.
Kuno froze, his heart skipping a beat. He felt his face flush to his hair roots and hoped his tan covered it. Evans's daughter. Who else would she be out here in the middle of nowhere on Evans's range? Kuno couldn't help staring at her, wondering how such a beautiful, genteel young woman could possibly be related to Franklin and Vince Evans. What a shame.
I'm not on your father's roll. I was just passing through.
His mind raced. He was thinking fast, trying to come up with an excuse for being on the mule shoe. At the same time, he found himself planning ahead. He might be able to use this girl to gain access to her father. The idea gave him a twinge of guilt, but only a twinge. He would not pull any punches in his war with Franklin Evans.
I thought I'd stop at the ranch headquarters and see if your father was hiring riders.
Delinda Evans studied him, and he tensed. What if she recognized him from the description on the wanted dodgers?
I didn't think you looked familiar. You look too nice.
How's that?
Father hires mostly ruffians. Said he needs them to keep squatters and rustlers out, but I think it's just a habit. By now, everyone knows not to squat on Mule Shoe Range or to rustle its cows. What's your name?
Kuno blinked, maintaining a bland expression.
Kyle Morgan.
Well, Kyle Morgan, can you shoot?
Can I shoot?
It's the first thing Father will ask. Not how well you can ride or cut calves from bullberry snags, but how well can you shoot?
I can shoot well enough.
She considered him thoughtfully.
You look tough enough, but maybe not rough enough. But your saving my life might sway you in Father's favor.
I wouldn't exactly say I saved your life.
Kuno coiled his lariat, his hands shaking slightly with the prospect of finally meeting Evans face to face.
I'd say you did. The mule shoe is over 20,000 acres. Do you know how long it would take Father's men to find me?
Delinda gazed down the ridge again and shook her head darkly.
I have a feeling I'd have been painter food on that ledge tonight. If you hadn't come along, Mr. Morgan.
Then her demeanor brightened, and she smiled, brown eyes flashing. Kuno found himself liking this girl very much. She had a frank but breezy manner. She'd obviously grown up out here. He doubted she'd always been here. She owned refinement she no doubt gleaned from a city, but her demeanor was definitely Western.
May I have some water?
You bet. Sorry.
He turned and jogged down the opposite slope, returning a minute later with Renegade in tow. He uncorked his canteen and handed it to her.
Thank you.
As she drank, several water drops dribbled over her lips, down her chin, and runneled through the light coating of dust along her neck, disappearing into her cleavage, lightly dampening her soiled blouse.
Oh, water never tasted so good.
Corking the canteen and returning it to him, she wiped her mouth with the back of her hand.
I suppose my father will be getting worried.
I'm ready to ride if you are.